Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's C-A-N-N-A insider.com. Now here's your program. For a cannabis cultivator, failing microbial and pesticide testing can be akin to a death sentence. Here to help us understand how to ensure you pass these tests is Sean Gray of Garden Clean. Sean, welcome to Canna Insider.
Matt, thank you so much for having me.
Give us a sense of geography. Where are you in the world today?
Today I am in currently sunny Denver, Colorado.
Okay. And what is Garden Clean on a high level?
Garden Clean is a fully customizable surface and three-dimensional environmental disinfection, sanitation, and deodorization system designed for cultivators by cultivators.
Good. It sounds like it could be used in college frat houses too. That's immediately what came to my mind.
It could be used really everywhere, every indoor environment where we want to manage pathogens, especially occupied spaces, whether those spaces are occupied by people or plants or animals.
All right, Sean, share a little bit about your background and journey and how you got involved in the cannabis space and Garden Clean.
Yeah, absolutely. So cannabis has been a big part of my life. I was involved in a series of unfortunate events in Florida that led me kind of to the ends of what the medical establishment could really provide for me there. So I moved to Colorado, where the medical cannabis program was having some great success with people like me. And in doing that, I started out in the dispensary side and was working in a dispensary up in Central City, Colorado, up in Annie Oakley's. It's the license number 00002. They got the first recreational license in Colorado as far as, you know, being open right on January 1st back in 2014. It's just this tiny little shop up in Central City. And it's a really cool place, but it happened to be with a company that was quickly growing at that time in this market and was building out some large cultivations and was having more product than they knew what to do with for the store. So they involved me because of my background in the traditional business side of things and other personal experiences of mine to do wholesale program for them. And in getting into wholesale at that time, it gave me a really good window into the operations of commercial cannabis as that was becoming a thing, being a part of the first Thousand Light grow that was a legal grow built here in Colorado, and seeing some of the inherent issues at scaling cultivation at that scale and at that speed. It really gave me a window into how things were operating as the advent of microbial testing came into play and all the other parameters of regulated cultivation. It really was a wonderful way to see how things were going and what was being done here. Through that, I was introduced to actually one of the guys who had a part in building out that facility and started really kind of branching and diverging into the cultivation aspect of it. It was something that had always interested me and stuff that I had done myself at my house. But that gave me, kind of the ability to jump right into what he was doing, which was at the time working in multiple states and being a part of multiple operations. And with doing so and seeing it and with the changes in regulations state to state, we were confronted by a problem, which was how do we manage and maintain pathogens and these other pathogen-related issues in a cultivation environment while maintaining the quality of our cannabis, you know, as people who love the plant and were benefited by it. So, with that, he was actually the first person to start using this type of chlorine dioxide product within commercial cultivation spaces. And then we've just really taken off from there at really being at the forefront of using this amazing molecule to manage these issues and really give another tool in the vast toolkit for commercial cultivators.
Okay. And so I mentioned just a minute ago about failing government required testing. This can really be terrible for cannabis businesses. Can you just first quickly tell us what are the tests that most cultivators are worried about?
So the biggest ones are the microbial testing for most of them. That is the ones, because this is what you can't see. So the problem with it And what the cannabis industry is really just starting to understand is, you know, this is an invisible enemy, and those are the hardest ones to fight, because you can clean things to the best of your ability. And if you're not really looking at it in a three-dimensional sense, you're missing things. And with the increased scrutiny and the heavy scrutiny on our industry and the higher regulatory and microbial standards than most other industries have to adhere to, we have to be very, very vigilant about it. And that's the one that keeps most cultivators up at night, because that can be the most expensive. So failing a batch can cost you, depending on batch size. So in a place like Nevada or California, where you have 5-pound batches, depending on market rate, you could be anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 that is out with every 5-pound batch of flower that fails. So that can be a very, very costly mistake.
And not only that, it's like, hey, that's your cost of failing the test immediately. But it's like, hey, this, my grow has been infiltrated here, and who knows like how deep this problem goes beyond this 5-pound testing batch, right?
Well, absolutely. And it's also the, if you have clientele that are waiting on product, and you have manufacturing schedules, or you have delivery schedules and timetables to adhere to, that's never a good conversation you have to have with the dispensaries, whether that is vertical and it's to something within your own network, or it's going out to your clientele. And when it's going out to clientele, that is going out to the open world. So that is can even be more damaging. So it can be a very, very costly issue. And as you said, once it's there, you have to do what you got to do to get it out of everything that could further cross-contaminate that environment.
So, if you were just to summarize quickly, why do some cultivators not pass this test? Or what are the top one or two reasons why aside from the presence of a pathogen, what led up to that point?
So, just the inherent... the environmental stresses and swings that we experience within indoor or within controlled environment cultivation, it puts a lot of stress on environments. It's also something where, cultivators, they spill water, you have pipes that break, you have people that overflow reses, you have all these different things. And even if they don't happen often, they still do happen. So we see the cumulative effect of just the stresses of doing so, of cultivating happening within that environment, leading to the further cross-contamination and kind of a feedback loop, so to say, a negative feedback loop of re-inoculating crops. And then I'd say the second would be the cross-contamination of people and not having adequate things in place to limit the spread of things, of these pathogens and other organisms through the movement of people and air and equipment throughout the facility.
Okay, so you obviously have a specialization in this, but a grower or business owner, they have a different mindset of what their day-to-day life is and what their goals are. If you, when you go in and talk to them, what do you think, what are they missing in their mindset in order to have a clean, pathogen-free grow so they can pass the test? Is there any blocks that you see where just like some, there's just one or two things they're ignorant about that they haven't learned yet, where if it's like, hey, let me help you just put, take the square peg out of the round hole and put like a round peg in here and think with me on this.
Yeah. So we have, and the cool things about our products is there's so much information that does so many different things. So it's easy to get lost in the details. It's easy to get lost in how it works and why does it do the things that it does. So we really tried to condense what it is that we're doing and what is that change in mindset. So we've really simplified it into a two-dimensional and a three-dimensional outlook on your facility. So where all commercial cultivators at this point understand they need to be cleaning in the two-dimensional. So they need to be cleaning all the surfaces. That is standard operating procedure in every commercial cultivation facility. With the step that they're missing is that those pathogens, and especially spore-forming pathogens and organisms, they are three-dimensional. They do not just say, oh, I'm only going to land on the surface, or, hey, that's your ballast, I'm not going to get inside of it, or, hey, that AC duct that you're just kind of constantly cycling me through. It's a great place for me to live. So there's all these different areas within the cultivation environments that you need to be able to successfully and easily eliminate these issues without worrying about it having a negative impact on that equipment. You need it to, you know, if it kills the pathogens, but it then go ahead and it decreases the lifespan on your equipment, the way that a lot of things can do, then is it really a benefit? And it's something where looking at it in that sense and having an easy to implement and easy to use system for anybody to effectively eliminate those items and those concerns, it's a really great tool to have in their toolkit.
Now, how has, you know, just the general attitude and mindset around keeping a grow clean evolved around over the last, let's say, 2 or 3 years? Is the bar being raised gradually, or is it only under threat of not passing a test that anybody comes to you?
I will say that there's always people that want to be ahead of the curve. There are always people, there's always a segment of the industry that wants to excel and wants to go above and beyond to make sure, because what it really focuses around is that the tests aren't there to make things hard for cultivators. They're there to make sure that people don't get sick. They're there to make sure that these types of issues aren't prevalent in a product that could be used by somebody, you know, even in a recreational market, could be being used medicinally and self-medicating. So, you know, you're wanting to make sure that you have that level of cleanliness for anything that goes to market. What I will say is that the mass adoption of protocols like this only take place under the threat of that new level of microbial testing.
Yeah.
So you can see in each state, depending on which level of testing that they fall under and what the testing protocols are. And you will see an increase in the use of these types of real disinfectants. And even then the things that are traditionally being used are very caustic, both to the environment, both to the people using them. If you have used a product that's a peroxyacetic or a peracetic acid and hydrogen peroxide, and you've fogged it, and you've, you know, unfortunately lifted your mask up, or unfortunately come in contact with it, you know how caustic that is. And so being able to perform that high level of disinfection to the point of sterilization, if necessary, just by dosing correctly with a compound that is an organic product that is not a dermal sensitizer, that doesn't, you know, damage people's skin, even if they came in contact with extremely high concentrated stock solutions that, you know, they would have no reasonable reason to come in contact with, still not have any issue like that. It's a very, very great thing to be able to provide to them. And seeing the change from state to state as testing regulations roll out, it's always a very interesting process, because it does take, you know, typically someone not just having the testing roll out, but somebody within that marketplace, you know, falling victim to that new testing or that new requirement, and then people seeing the actual fallout and outcome of that, and that's what really makes people start operating in the new compliant manner.
Well, let's kind of talk about the Michael Jordan of cleaning agents here, chlorine dioxide. If most listeners are probably their hard drive spinning trying to remember their high school chemistry, like chlorine dioxide, do I know what that means? Tell us, just give us a basic introduction of what chlorine dioxide is and why it's such an awesome cleaning agent.
So chlorine dioxide, for most people, they would not have heard about it in their high school chemistry class. It is a unique molecule, but because of some of its properties, it's not something that's very, very prevalent. Up until recent times, you needed very big infrastructure, very expensive equipment to generate it. So it was reserved for like municipal water treatment systems, large paper mills, and things like that. Where just very, very large infrastructure, so it justified the millions of dollars to install and operate that equipment. Then there was the rise of the stabilized chlorine dioxide, which was a part A and a part B solution, whether it's liquid or tablets or anything like that, and marketed as chlorine dioxide because when you mix those two compounds together, there is some chlorine dioxide that's generated. But what you're also generating is the mixture of those two products, which typically one is a sodium chlorite or a sodium hypochlorite, and the other one's an acid. So you have all these dissolved acids and dissolved chlorine compounds, and then all the really weird stuff that it makes during the reaction process. So it's sold as chlorine dioxide. And so some people who have used that type of product in traditional agriculture or in some other type of space, you know, they might go, oh, chlorine dioxide, that's kind of weird stuff. Where our chlorine dioxide is different is we have the, our partner on this is the inventor of the sachet method for generating ultra pure chlorine dioxide. So it is a pharmaceutical and hospital grade. We have products that are used in a tremendous amount of pharmaceutical manufacturers for very, very large scale pieces of manufacturing equipment that they then sell out and use our product for the disinfection for those pieces of equipment because it has the highest material compatibility. Fancy way of saying that it is very safe for surfaces. So it won't pit stainless steel. It won't break down your plastics. It's got, it's a much, much safer product to use for your infrastructure and for people than, you know, your traditional disinfectants. And so by having this technology, we can produce just chlorine dioxide with none of those byproducts, which opens up this really, really cool molecule.
Okay. And just so we can visualize when, what does it look like when this sachet, so for people can get a sense?
It looks like a little white pouch, almost like a really really, really crazy tea bag. Maybe that would be a good way to visualize it. Okay. And it's just a pouch. So one of the great things with our liquid products is they're actually generated on site. So we save a tremendous amount of resources in the shipping process. We ship, our largest pack, which makes 30 gallons, is about the size of a large postcard and about a half an inch thick. So it is much, much more cost effective for shipping and transport and storage, especially for your larger scale facilities.
Okay. So a postcard size tea bag that you then put in a container of water to create the chlorine dioxide. Is that right?
Correct. Yep. Just in a sealed container. So there's no, we do offer the generation equipment and dispensers and stuff like that, but it can be done with any sealed container. And water. So it really opens up the possibilities of using this everywhere without needing, you know, even electricity.
So is this dangerous for my skin? Or if I fill up a beer bong full of chlorine dioxide water and drink it, what would happen? Let's go.
So it is not damaging the skin. So it's not a skin irritant or, you know, what they refer to as a dermal sensitizer. So it is safe for contact. Well, one of the great things is like our full strength disinfection, which is 100 part per million. We actually require no PPE to use even in an occupied space. If you're using it out of a normal sprayer, so like out of a pump sprayer, a hand, like a, you know, little 1 liter spray bottle at a table or out of a, you know, a backpack sprayer, it requires no PPE. So you can achieve a full disinfection without, while maintaining like OSHA compliance without needing to have any type of protective gear on whatsoever. And that disinfection level is actually registered for use against SARS-CoV-2. So you can kind of know that you're getting rid of any viruses as well as eliminating any of these other pathogens that affect us on the cultivation or processing side.
Okay. And so just help us out here. What's the actual process that is taking place on a chemistry level to create this cleaning? What's going on with this sachet and the chlorine dioxide and the water?
So we refer to the sachet as a microreactor because we have some really cool things that are taking place. So once that sachet was placed within the water, water vapor goes into the sachet. It mixes with the sodium chlorite and the citric acid that's inside. And that reaction produces, as we talked about before, chlorine dioxide, as well as some of these other compounds. Now, what that membrane is doing is it's only letting pure chlorine dioxide gas out of that sachet. So the chlorine dioxide molecule is very tiny. It's about 0.124 nanometers. So it's smaller than any virus or bacteria, any spore or anything like that. So it gives us some really cool properties. So with our product, unlike any other chlorine dioxide product, even other sachet-based products out there. Our product is only letting that pure chlorine dioxide gas out. From there, like with our liquid product, if we do it in a sealed container, we have a liquid product which we can use at a number of different concentrations to achieve a number of different things, from disinfection, sanitation, deodorization, irrigation cleaning, things like that. We have a couple of direct gas phase products as well. We have a fast release product. So we're releasing just that ultra pure chlorine dioxide, it's a direct gas, dry gas fumigation, which we use for getting into all those very, very microscopic openings inside of your HVAC and ducting and inside of dehumidification and in all those unsealed places. And then we have an extended release product, which has one other compound, another proprietary compound with inside of that sachet. And that one is a humidity activated. So this one, as long as you're above 25% humidity, will just react with the humidity in the air. And it produces a very low, it's OSHA and EPA compliant for chronic exposure level of chlorine dioxide within to that environment over the course of 30 days. So it gives us some really cool ways of taking advantage of this molecule, which does some really, really cool things at the molecular level when it comes to operating as a biocide.
Wow, that sounds clever. A good idea. You just let it do its work over 30 days in the air and gets into every little nook and cranny, huh?
Yeah, we call it the guard in Garden Clean. So it's really something that, you know, with the chlorine dioxide that leaves no residue. So we wanted a product that gives us some kind of protection over the course, you know, of time. So, you know, the fact that the chlorine dioxide molecule does not, you know, leave any residue behind, you know, we developed this product so that it will provide that level of protection in between your traditional cleaning times.
Okay. So what does cleaning a grow look like? How do you go about it step by step?
So the we would be looking at it in a couple different ways. So the basic way to do it with just speaking on the terms of like a single environment, what we refer to as our room reset protocol. So that is a use of our chlorine dioxide liquid spray to spray down all of the surfaces within that room that could get wet, followed by a treatment with our fast release product to eliminate any of those additional items that are within that space. So the real step-by-step with that is, you know, this is the final cleaning step. So you'd want to first physically clean it. So if you have any debris, any soil, any thing that's left on it. So that's the first step, would be to clean everything. And then this is kind of the last step. So you go through, we use our liquid at a 100 part per million concentration and spray everything that we can get wet. It is a very, very easy to do process, and follow it up with the fast release treatment, which we'll typically do overnight. That's a really good way to just let it sit for that, you know, 10 to 12 hours. Come back in the next morning, take the fast release. The liquid can be dumped down any drain. The sachet can be discarded in any receptacle. And at that point, we'll deploy the extended releases and then reload the room. So this is a treatment that we do for the cultivation rooms or really any space when you're trying to reset it, whether that's in between harvests or at whatever other interval that you'd like to do it.
Okay. And so, Sean, chlorine dioxide seems like it would be a helpful cleaning agent for not just the grow rooms, but the actual water that's coming in. You know, water comes in from your municipal source and it needs to be cleaned before it goes to the plant. Can you use chlorine dioxide in that case?
Yes, absolutely. So chlorine dioxide is something that is NSF certified for water consumption for people, animals, and plants worldwide. So it is something that can be used with great success, not just for purifying water and for eliminating inherent pathogen pressure within it, but when looking at a cultivation facility, you know, as you said, even if you're on municipal water supply, you're still at the mercy of that municipal water system to be operating at full 100% efficacy. And in this business, with all of the things that we see, you know, we have to have plans in place for anything that we cannot control. So we actually had developed a system, we call it the Guardian Aqua. And what we're doing is we're injecting a very low dose amount of chlorine dioxide. So this can be done two different ways. It can be done with the proper water testing and things like that. But with the other way to do it is because of chlorine dioxide's really cool properties where it actually breaks down as it's working, you can actually just by dialing in the residual amount of chlorine dioxide within a system, you can establish that you have eliminated any inherent pathogen pressure or pathogens within that water source without having to do all that kind of testing, because the amount of chlorine dioxide necessary kind of depends upon the amount of issues that are within that water. We've had some facilities that were having issues with fusarium, tithium, and other root fungal issues, and they really couldn't trace it back to anything within their systems. Have this system that we had previously deployed within livestock and other agricultural areas. And within cannabis, it has been an absolute wonderful implementation, not just for dealing with the issues with the municipal or the source water, but also with maintaining a very, very clean system. So, you know, these systems, when you have this low amount of chlorine dioxide within them, it eliminates bioslime from being able to form there. So it really keeps systems in a almost a brand new state once implemented.
Okay. Yeah. You know, could someone use that for a swimming pool then? Like if I were to have a home swimming pool, is there a way to get around using that powdered chlorine then and just use chlorine dioxide? And so you don't have all this, that chemical residue on your skin?
You absolutely could. It's not a system that we've commercialized yet, but I can say that we have a few people within the company who do use chlorine dioxide within their own pools. This really is a pharmaceutical grade product. So what we're doing now is as we're continuing to scale into not just within cannabis, but within a lot of different other markets, is just consistently working to help reduce the cost of this product so that it can become the norm really everywhere traditional chlorine products or traditional disinfectants are being used.
I'm just thinking out loud here about, you know, what are the best practices for a cultivator, how to treat the water. I'm thinking here's chlorine dioxide, reverse osmosis, pH testing. Like, what are the kind of things that you would say, like, hey, this is what you want to think about when you're getting your water ready for your plants?
So our reverse osmosis is still a system that would be used to eliminate the dissolved solid compounds that were within that source water. So what might be referred to as hard water or, you know, high calcium or whatever it might be based on that. So an RO or another filtration system to deal with those total dissolved solids and other impurities within the water would still be a step one. And then, you know, managing this, you know, where you have traditional chlorine dioxide that's not a membrane-based. You have ozone. You have a number of other solutions, so they call it. And a lot of times you have groups that are just injecting amounts of these acid-based, peroxyacetic and peracetic acid and hydrogen peroxide-based line cleaners into these systems. And what those tend to do is those actually create microfissures. They actually create holes within those irrigation and fertigation systems that they are molecularly too big to fit within. So you have this tiny little hole, and then you have bioslime, which lands on it, and then you have this encapsulation effect that takes place. So it's why as systems get older, you see a need in upticking the amount of these products that are being used because A, they are creating a problem that they are too big to solve. And then secondly, they are not a mechanical kill. So chlorine dioxide is a mechanical kill. It cuts through bioslime like nothing else. So we are also molecularly small enough to fit in that hole. So by using chlorine dioxide as an initial treatment for any type of irrigation system, will eliminate really anything within side of it, get the system back to essentially brand new. And then by implementing an injection of it, either with a dosing pump or even added into the system manually, you can, you know, prevent that bioslime and algae deposits from building up in the first place, and then ensuring that you have pathogen-free water, making it to everywhere throughout that facility.
Great stuff, Man, I could just come up with heavy metal rock band names just listening to you all day. Bio Slime, Mechanical Kill. I mean, you've got endless amounts. Cross Pathogen. So anyway, so for business owners and growers listening, what are the biggest takeaways here about keeping their grow clean, passing tests, and just having great protocols in general?
So, well, there's really a number of things there. So first is throughout the cultivation cycle itself. You know, the failed microbial testing or even visible issues are the symptom of a deeper root cause. And those causes are actually impacting the health of the plant, the yields of that plant. So first and foremost, you're suffering from lost or decreased yields throughout the cultivation cycle itself. And then as you work your way through that process, you have the potential cross-contamination throughout the entire, every time that product is handled through harvest processes, through trimming, through packaging, all of those different processes. So having something in place to essentially erase any potential cross-contamination really goes a very long way in maintaining the sellability of your product and maintaining having a consumer health product that is safe to market.
Okay. Sean, I want to move to some personal development questions to help listeners get a better sense of who you are personally. But before I ask those questions, you're traveling around a whole bunch of states. You told me you've been in a whole bunch of states recently. How do you see different states handling kind of these lockdown procedures? Is there some that are doing it better than others? Are the vibes different in each state?
They are very, very different. It is you get to see just how different the country is. But truthfully, when you operate in a lot of states in cannabis, you've seen that from the get-go. When you see just how vastly different the regulations are within cannabis, it kind of makes you understand just how separate and different all of our states really are. And that's what makes them great, but it also leads to a lot of confusion as far as what's acceptable practices and what needs to be done to, you know, maintain compliance. And that, I think, speaks equally for cannabis as it does for the situation that we're currently going through.
So back to those personal development questions, is there a book that's had a big impact on your life or way of thinking that you'd like to share?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really two books. I think I got the second one and then I got the first one. The first one was the Hidden Messages in Water by Masaru Emoto. Mm-hmm. And he did these really interesting studies, you know, filming and photographing water at a very, 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 very high level. And the way that water could impact and the way that just by speaking and the vibrations of what was said to this water, what it was exposed to and what impact it had on it structurally. I think that book may have had one of the greatest impacts on the way that I think about things because it really shows some tangible evidence of, you know, being, you know, what we say and what we think really having a big effect on the world around us.
Okay. And what is the most interesting thing going on in your field besides what you do day to day?
I would say the most interesting thing is just seeing the cannabis industry grow so quickly and see where, you know, a few years ago, it was still, you know, it was still taboo, even though it was regulated and taxed and acceptable in a few states. And watching that transition to being something that is, you know, your grandma's like, hey, you should buy stock in this company. It's just it's pretty crazy to see it. And a lot of us who have you know, had some existence within cannabis for, you know, a long time, you know, you see it, and it's cool to have the penetration into the psyche of the country. But it's also watching it transition into something that is, you know, federal decriminalization or regulation of some sort looks and appears closer than ever before. And in some of the other areas that we operate where we are working with the FDA and these other federal agencies and knowing how they operate and kind of having like a foreshadowing of what I personally think the cannabis industry is going to be going through over the next couple years as we get closer to and eventually achieve that. So it's just got me thinking about that, and I'm glad to be where I'm at, and I'm really grateful to the founder of our company for finding this. When he told me about chlorine dioxide, I was against it, just to be completely honest. It sounded scary. You know, chlorine dioxide doesn't sound like something safe and gentle. And when you're talking about using it around cannabis plants, it's like, oh, whoa, what do you want to do here?
Yeah.
And it was really like something where I was like, yeah, right, that doesn't work. And then when I saw what he did with it, I was really blown away. And at that point, that really, you know, showed me everything that I needed to know, because, you know, having the background that I did and seeing all the different places around the country and how they were operating, knew kind of what the inherent level of cleanliness was within the industry, and knew that it needed to increase in order to be able to stay relevant.
Final question. What is your favorite comfort food?
I would have to say chicken Parmesan. That was what my mom would always make for me when I was down when I was a kid. So,
oh, that's a good one.
It's not good for you, man. It's not good for you.
But I don't know about that. You know, food made with love. I think there's something to be said for that.
Oh, I will agree with you. I will agree with you 100%. Love makes everything better.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of those foods where it's like, if it's not made well, it can really stink. Like, I've had a lot of bad chicken parm, but when it's made well, it's almost like, and same with eggplant parm. It's like a religious experience. Like, if it's made just perfectly.
I think Italian food, it really sucks in the love, and helps it come across. It's a good medium for that. But I think that's the same for all food. All food really does that. It's a good medium for exchange.
Well, Sean, thanks so much for coming on the show. Tell listeners how they can connect with you and learn more about Garden Clean.
So our website, Garden Clean, www.garden, G-A-R-D-N. There's no E in garden. So GardenClean.com. We're on Instagram at Garden Clean, Facebook. They can also email us hello@GardenClean.com.
Great.
Reach out through the website as well. We'll be more than happy to talk to anybody.
Well, very fascinating stuff here. And I'm sure this is going to help a lot of people think differently about how they can pass these tests and just have a better process for keeping their grow clean. So thanks so much for coming on, Sean, and have a great rest of the year.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments.
Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider.
Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. Please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canna Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.